all. And thanks again for enjoying us, for joining us here. I hope you enjoy it on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And of course, as always, sitting to my right is Kyle Filio Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in beautiful Skeleton Studios, ready to get the show popping.
Oh, we're not washed away. Thanks for everybody that's been sending messages. I saw that Beaumont's been catching a lot of hell. Dude, it's bad. But we're not that far east. We're kind of centralized, north centralized.
I saw over there, Highway 10 on the state line between Texas and Louisiana. It was like completely underwater.
You see they called in the Cajun Navy?
Yeah, it looks
all them fellas are out there in their boats rescuing folks.
Yeah, it looked like the ocean was on I-10.
Yeah.
That's crazy. It is bad. I know I bring up baseball all the time, but Jacob's coach.
We're tired of it.
Is from Beaumont. And a couple of years ago, his folks' place flooded. And it ruined everything. His childhood home was totally underwater.
Gone.
Yep. Luckily, they had flood insurance, so it got totally replaced. Man. And now they just bought a house up here. His parents did.
Moved up here, huh?
Yeah, I think because they want to be close to grandkids.
We don't get near enough rain up here. It's funny because it'll be like it's been hot and dry. And then when we get the rain, it's just like they poured it out of a bucket on us.
Man, but it wasn't a very hot summer.
Nope,
it's been very cool, and it's still cool. I saw where it snowed in Jackson Hole, Wyoming the other day, and they said that they probably will be able to open up the ski lifts and stuff.
I'd like to go up there.
End of October because they're already getting snowfall. And Cody just got back from Wyoming, and he told me this last week, and he said, "Yeah, all the mountains at the tops are all covered in snow already."
I'd like to go up there and check it out.
Awesome.
I got a story for you that's going to make you laugh real quick. I got to tell you.
Sure.
I was talking to I went to Oklahoma this past weekend. We went up to visit a bunch of my wife's family, and they were having their high school, their high school homecoming, right?
Yes.
And so a bunch of the younger cousins, a bunch of our cousins, their kids. So the younger cousins that are still playing high school football, we went and watched. There were three of them on the field together. So we got to go out. It's a real small town. And then we stayed with some of our cousins. And I have a cousin named Paige. And Paige and my son and all, they're the same age. So they're all about 25. And she is hilarious, okay? Blonde-haired, blue-eyed, and extremely over the top. Like, she's extremely extra, and it's so much fun. Because, she's highly animated, and she's one of those people that all, just silly things happen to her. Like, I have a niece named Jessica that everything, the same way, the one that was the flight attendant, the same thing. Those two are like carbon copies of each other. So she's a dental hygienist, and she was going into her, she was telling us this story. She said that one Friday, this had just happened recently, because she texted me right before we started and was telling me the other end of the story, and I'll fill you in on that. But a couple of Fridays ago, she thought she'd be a good employee with all the girls that she works with, and she went to Brahms, and she bought those biscuits. You know how you can get like the 5 for $5 bag of biscuits?
Yeah, they have the bag of burgers as well.
Yeah, okay. So she bought the sausage biscuits for all the girls that she works with. And she bought 2 bags of them, okay?
Yep.
But she paid extra for one to have egg and cheese on it for her, because that's the way she wants her biscuit. So she said it was real overcast that morning, and it was kind of cloudy. And she said that she got caught in a little bit of traffic. And the minute she got to work, the bottom fell out. So it starts raining, right?
Yep.
And she's like, oh, man. So she said she gets the bags of biscuits, and then she gets her umbrella, and she jumps out, and it's pouring down rain. And as she tells the story, she gets like 10 foot, the wind's whipping, folds the umbrella back the wrong way, and the bags are getting soaked. She's trying to get through the parking lot running, and the bags tear through, and all the biscuits go rolling start rolling. She said hers rolls, opens up, the egg and cheese fly out.
Man.
They're getting rained on. She said she's trying to gather it all up. She finally gets it gathered up. Just, it's ruined, like every bit of it. Like, it blew the papers off of everything. So she's running around. She gets it all gathered up, brings it in to pretty much throw it away. She is soaked to the bone, right, by this time. She said she opens the front door. She's holding all this stuff in her arms. Her ruined umbrella's laying there. And one of the girls walks by the hallway to the way they come in, looks over at her and was like, oh, did you get rained on? Said, I got a little damp too on my shoulder. Is all she's so she starts cursing the girl, right? Just giving her like, what, you know, and going off. So we were laughing. We're like, that's your luck. People on the outside. So she goes, I had to work all day while I was drying out, smelling. She's like, what is she? I'm trying to think what she said, like rained on ass the whole time I'm trying to work on people. So she texts me just now, and she was like, decided to do it today instead of Friday. And it worked. No rain. I got my biscuits back inside. Everything worked out. So she's So Paige, good job on the biscuit recovery.
Man, that just sucks deal. Though.
Yeah.
Everybody's had that, right? Yeah. When you're trying to do something good and it just doesn't work out and you're just like, what else could happen?
Then it, dude, it's like the other day I was here in the studio and I kicked my shoes off, was messing around. I put my phone on the edge of the desk, turned around and bumped it. And my phone fell perfectly up and down. Like, you know, like charged in down towards the ground. Didn't crack it. It landed on the edge of my big toe where the nail starts and the skin stops.
Yeah.
I thought you hit me with a hammer. It fell. The pain was ridiculous the way it hit perfect. Like, I don't know if it was on the corner or what it was. And I'm hopping around. I'm like, great. My back still hurts. Now I've injured my toe. How am I going to be able to tell anybody I dropped my phone on my bare foot?
I don't know.
That's what kind of a sissy I am.
Have you been seeking any treatment for your injured back?
I went, you know, like I said, I went to the doctor, got all that stuff done. Nothing yet. I'm going to wait till I do all the stuff she told me to do, and then I'm rolling the dice, man. I'm thinking I'm going to go. Well, of course I'll do massage, and then I think I'm going to go to the friend of ours that does acupuncture. I may give that a whirl, and then somebody that I train with, Chad, that I train jiu-jitsu with, told me to try. I'm going to mispronounce it, and I know y'all are used to this by now. Arasti. It's some sort of like deep tissue massage. And it's like, I think you have to be a chiropractor before you can even go study this stuff.
Huh.
Something. But there's one not too far from us. It's like right over there in White Settlement, I believe is where it's at.
Okay.
So right there off of 820 Loop. And I'm going to go over there and check him out whenever I get all this stuff done.
I need to go down to Austin to the float lab and let old Katie give me a deep tissue massage again. Man, that was amazing.
Dude, yeah.
Very.
If I'd hit the lottery, I would have one of those float tanks. I'd like to go get a massage every week.
Do you play the lottery?
No, you got to play it first.
Do you know now that they have an app and you can just like purchase lotto tickets just on your
gamble.
Phone? I don't gamble. I don't play it either. I'm just asking.
I don't gamble. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't curse.
I like the sports book. Like, I like to bet on college football. That's kind of fun.
You're always betting on like what Crosby's going to do for every season.
Season's about to fire up and I'm kind of excited.
Kinda.
Yeah. I'm tired of getting my hopes built up every year and then it just never turns out. So now I kind of lay back in the cut till it's almost time for playoffs. Then maybe I'll get excited because I'm just tired of getting all emotional.
Just being let down.
Wrapped up in it. Yeah, it happens all the time.
Your wife can probably relate to that. Like, so, what story were you going to tell me?
Let's get into the news. Every once in a while we talk about actual newspaper articles that were printed in old newspapers long ago. And some of these are pretty interesting because, I don't know, I like the stories. Now, this particular one appeared in the Hammond Times, which is in Munster, Indiana, on October 25th, 1935. And the article is interesting because it describes a supposed lost race cam of wild men
awesome.
In the British Columbia wilderness. The Hammond Times article says, Sasquatch men, remnants of a lost race of wild men who once inhabited the rocky regions of British Columbia centuries ago, are reported roaming the province again. After an absence of several months from the district of Harrison Mills, 50 miles east of Vancouver, the long, weird, wolf-like howls of these wild men are once again being heard, and two of the hairy monsters were reported seen in the Morris Valley on the Harrison River. Residents of the district tell of seeing two giants leaping and bounding out of the forest and striding across the duck feeding ground. They were wallowing now and again in the bog and mire and long waving swamp grasses. Now, reportedly, these wild men, Cam, get this, are as agile as goats. That's what the newspaper says. It says the strange men, it was reported, after emerging from the woods, came leaping down the jagged rocky hillside with the agility and the lightness of Rocky Mountain goats. Snatches of their weird language floated on the breeze across the lake to the pioneer settlement at the foot of the hills. These giants walked with an easy gait across the swamp flats and at the Mourns Creek in the shadow of Little Mystery Mountain. It says they straddled and floated along on a log, which they propelled with their long hairy hands and huge feet across the sluggish glacial stream to the opposite side. So these things got a log.
Straddled it.
They're on it, straddling or hanging onto it. They know it's like a life preserver or something to keep them floating. And they're paddling their way across. Very cool. It says they abandoned the log and climbed hand over hand up the almost perpendicular cliff at a point known as Gibraltar and disappeared at the top of the ridge. They carried two large clubs and walked round a herd of cattle directly in their path. Now, a local Native American told a strange story. He says the return of the giants to the legendary stronghold of the Sasquatch monsters is at a spot that took place last March. A huge rock narrowly missed his canoe, he claims, while he was fishing. And he looked up and he said he saw a huge and hairy monster stamping his feet and waving his arms wildly.
Maybe he was just alerting him to watch out for the rough water.
Yeah. He said that he escaped by cutting his fishing tackle and paddling away. And he declared that twice in the past, Sasquatch have stolen salmon, which he tied outside of his house, out of the reach of his dogs. And so they've been appearing around his cabin. Now, this, like I said, was this was published in the Hammond Times on Friday, October 25th, 1935. So these stories were circulating all the way over to Indiana about people, these ancient lost race of wild men, which once occupied the area, are now back. So I wonder how many of these stories were retold back then, kind of spread around, and how many this is what I'm getting at, basically. What if Sasquatch was a real thing at one time?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not referring all the way back to like Gigantopithecus. I'm talking about like in the 20th century. And now there's no more of them. That's why we don't find them anymore. Maybe back in 1935, there was a small population of them. Because you got to think there was way less people back then.
Yeah.
I've flown over British Columbia before. It's massive and it's all wild. I could only imagine in 1935, it was even more wild.
What's sad is like you and I both off air wish, we just want him to be real.
I wanted to, but at the same time I don't, because then the mystery's gone.
I don't want him to be found. I want him to be real, 100%
real.
Oh
yeah, for sure.
Like, it's just like, for, like we've said before, part of me, one day I'm like, there's no way. There's no way they have enough food. There's no way there's an active enough breeding group. There's no way this is real. And then the very next day I wake up and I'm like, yeah, yeah, it's real. What these people are seeing, it's they're not misidentifying. You know, some of these stories are true. Like everything they're seeing is real.
I'm with you.
And all that. And I go back and forth daily, man, on how
some of the stories, I mean, it's also regional. Like it depends on where it is. Like if it's a sighting on a busy, on a suburb, which there are sightings.
Yeah.
I'm like, come on.
But if it's in BC.
But if it's in the middle of BC, then I'm like, oh, yeah, that probably makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, literally not even 7 days ago, I spoke to a hunter. And he was talking to me about strange activity on the place that he hunts. I mean, it happens a lot.
We're going to have to get him on.
Yeah, this particular gentleman, I've been trying to get him to come on. And hopefully soon he'll make an appearance. And we'll have to get, because he's got... He's a lifetime hunter, so, and he's 60, and so, or 55, somewhere between 55 and 60. So, I mean, this is going back into the 70s. He's got crazy stories.
Yeah, wild stories of stuff that's happened.
And, you know what you're saying? You read these people, and you're like, okay, this person's seen numerous times. You know, we always talk about that, but this guy's... He's one of those guys, man. He's got a lifetime of just odd things happening.
Like it's like we've said before, it's like some people, it's drawn to them.
I think so.
I'm the opposite. It's pushed away from me. I don't get to have anything cool.
That's me. And that's why I think I'm so fascinated by the paranormal and
which
led us to do the show, is because I've never seen anything hardly. I saw a green orb one time float against the wind across a piece of land.
Yeah.
And one time me and Dr. Neck were up one night on a wood deck, and it was overcast, and we saw something glowing moving through the clouds, but it was in the clouds, so I couldn't see the shape of it.
Yeah.
And that's literally the only two paranormal things I've ever had.
Dr. Neck.
Yeah, Dirty Redneck. That's what the DR stands for.
DR stands for Dirty Red.
A.K.A. Dirt Dauber.
Yeah, guy we grew up with, literally went to school with. We've known him our whole life.
He's also known as Big Baby Jesus.
Yeah.
He's got lots of names.
Lots of names. Dirt Dog.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, it started out as Dirty Redneck, and then it was Dirty, and then it became DR, and then it just became Dr. Neck.
Yeah. Yeah, his parents were from like the wilds of Appalachia, and somehow they migrated down here. And he's dirt. He's like, what's the character on the Peanuts? The guy that's just Linus, is it?
Yeah,
that's always
Linus.
Covered in dirt.
Yeah.
That's him. But you know, if you need something fixed, I mean, he's the man.
And still to this day,
I mean, no matter if you need something welded, if you need something, I mean, hemmed up, call the DR Neck. He's on it.
The doctor is in.
Moving on.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't remember if I've told this or not. Kyle and I were discussing this because I had this story, and I've got to tell this one before I tell the next one. But I don't think I've told them, but I'm going to bring it up. It's about a gigantic dragonfly, folks. Now, the idea, we're going to discuss something on the next episode, and it's disturbing. But the idea of giant insects are insane. But anyway, this guy's talking about that it's not a giant bird, he said. But he goes on to say that me and my younger brother saw a huge dragonfly spanning well over a foot and a half long in Bolton, England, back in 2002.
A foot and a half long dragonfly.
Dragonfly, yeah.
Okay.
Now, they do know because they have fossil records of giant dragonflies millions of years ago. Something that had to do, they said, with the oxygen content of the atmosphere allowed these insects to be... Here he goes.
That's what it sounds like, right?
No?
Yeah. Continue.
This giant dragonfly. So I saw this. When I got done with that, I saw this little old thing in a forum group that says, I saw a giant hummingbird.
A giant hummingbird.
Yeah, it says, it's a very strange thing that happened to me. I was around 9 or 10 years old and in the backyard of my house alone and on a sunny afternoon. And in the garden, it says, we have a lemon tree. I was about 7 meters in distance from this lemon tree. At one moment, I heard some noises and movement in these leaves of the lemon tree. It says, when I turned around, you have to visualize this. What I saw was an inexplicably large hummingbird, about a meter in length. It was feeding on the lemon tree flowers. Now, I barely saw it because it left as soon as it saw me. Now, I remember being shocked for a moment because I couldn't believe what I saw. It was too impossible to be real, but the only thing that I could remember were how beautiful the greenish-colored feathers were. Now, immediately, I went to tell my mother, and of course, she didn't believe me. And in fact, to this day, nobody really believes this story at all. Now, I still don't have an explanation for that, and that was over 10 years ago. I've searched the internet, searched all over, have not found a similar experience. And I was wondering if anyone out there has a similar experience or if you have any theory on what it could have been. Now, I like this here at the end. I think maybe it was a being of light or maybe an angel or maybe even a being of another dimension. But I don't know. But you're talking about a 3-foot-long hummingbird.
I never really thought about it till they just mentioned that. But yeah, maybe it was like a fairy, you know, yeah. Like the fae folk. It wasn't a hummingbird. It kind of looked like one.
Yes.
Or perhaps they can change their shape.
But could you imagine the sound like of a 3-foot hummingbird?
No, I can't. I can't. Because you can hear them as small as they are. You can hear them.
Yeah.
They run into my mother's windows in her back porch all the time.
Do you have a bunch out there?
Knocked them. They like knocked themselves out. And I remember I was over there doing something and she found one. She's like, oh man, it's dead. And I was looking at it. I was holding it in my hand and it started moving. I was like, I don't think it's dead. And then it just like woke up and flew off. Like just literally knocked itself silly.
Man.
But you'll hear them every time. Boom, you'll hear it on the glass.
Like, one's down. One's down.
I don't know what it is about them. I don't know if they're like looking through her house and they see through the front windows and they think, oh, I'll just fly through there. But that whatever reason, they run into that window all the time.
They hit it with some authority.
But only hummingbirds.
The rest of the other birds.
Did you know
don't.
Praying mantis can jack hummingbirds?
Yeah, I've watched the videos of it.
That's insane because, like, how much bigger is the bird than the actual insect?
A praying mantis will jack a lot of things.
Can you imagine if they were, like, the size of, like,
6-footer
bulldozer or something? Yeah, I mean, there's reports of the mantis beings being in space. I'm like, yeah, it makes sense because of the way they look, you know, the way their head turns and stuff.
Insects are disturbing any way you look at
it. I think I talked about it on the show.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was the Elite Show when we had the 2,000 praying mantises that Luke accidentally released in our house.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good times. Good times, folks.
Yeah, great
no, I don't. Times. I don't care. Praying mantises are cool. Like if you released 2,000 cockroaches or something, then we'd have a problem.
You probably didn't have any more flying insects or anything running around the house for a while.
No. Oddly enough, all jokes aside, like we found a lot of dead spiders. So like, I really think the things were jacking them.
They were just cleaning them out.
So if you got a lot of spiders, buy you some praying mantises. I stomped on a spider the other day and went, like a cloud of millions of babies came out. I was like, that's great.
Did you scream and run?
Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty
and
much.
The big one under the dishwasher, I don't know if it's still under there or if it's somewhere loose in the house.
You're not look. You didn't pull everything out to look?
I actually forgot all about it till about 2 in the morning, about 3 nights ago. I was like,
you just woke up.
I remembered that. And then for the next hour, I couldn't sleep. Because every time I felt something, I was like, oh, Jesus, it's gotten in here and it's probably grown. It's probably bigger now.
Is it like crawling across your covers? Well, let's take a quick break, folks. And when we come back from the break, there's something I want to discuss. It's a weird Australia. I have some really strange stories coming from our friends down under. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Here we go. Philly.
Yes, sir.
Cue it.
Oh, okay. Here we go. Oh, yeah.
This gets me in the mood.
I'm thinking about it. The mood for Australian rules football.
I need to get a didgeridoo.
Throwing a boomerang. I've messed around with one before. I can't play it.
I bet you have.
No, a friend of mine went to Australia and brought it back and kind of jacked around with it. Luke got a boomerang because when my wife went to Hawaii for the wedding, her cousin, yep, lives in Australia, who lives in Sydney, who got married in Hawaii, brought Luke a toy boomerang. So Luke was all excited when he got it. He went in the backyard and he came back in about 3 minutes, all depressed.
Threw it over the fence.
He's like, it doesn't come back.
So now, like, Luke, what you have is a stick.
Well, and I told him, I go, well, it takes practice. If you practice, so he's in the impression, if he practices and learns just how to do it, that he'll be able to whip that boomerang and it'll come back. But this isn't about me. This is about you, bro. You're talking about
Australia.
Weird Australia. Well, let's drop it on us, man.
Well, all right, here we go. First of all, we have to go. Look, it's one of the places that I would really, really like to go see. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'd really, you have to drop the didgeridoo. It's driving me nuts now.
Sorry.
I would really like to go see it. And we've got plenty of friends down there. And so it's one of those things that I would like to take the trip. And I've discussed some crazy stuff that they've seen in Australia before. For the size of that place, there's not a lot of people. So, like we always talked about the Thylacine. We've had them on a bunch of times, too, with the research guys. I think the Thylacine actually has a chance of being still alive.
I definitely do, because we know Warren and Chris and Bill, all those guys over there, the Thylacine Research Unit. We've had them on the show twice, I believe. And I've seen other interviews with Forrest Galante. And I've heard of another biologist I heard somewhere in Papua New Guinea, because they were there too. Mm-hmm. And all of them, they all seem to believe that they're there. And apparently there's lots of farmers and locals that claim that they see them. And it's kind of like we've talked about on the show before, is like, for the locals, it's not a big deal. It's been like, did you see a coyote? Yeah, I've seen coyotes.
Yeah.
What's the big deal? I definitely think they're still there. So I think they're extant.
This is something I want to discuss. It's called the Carterfield Monster.
The Carterfield Monster.
And I got this from a listener named Bonnie, and I guess she lives down there. She didn't really say in the whole deal. She just said, look, you're going to have to check this out. So I want to read this. And this is, like I said, it's very odd. So this is how it starts. It says, in the summer, in one summer, it says here, they're talking about this, I guess this person telling this story, says that a man drove up out of the blue, and he looked like a city kind of guy for the most part. Although he clearly spent quite a bit of time outside, judging by his tan and the lines at the corners of his eyes. He introduced himself, although I'm not sure it's a nice thing to do. It says here, name him without his consent, so he doesn't give the whole thing, but says that he introduced himself as, this is what this person says, we'll call him Jack West. So the person doesn't give the fella's name, so we're going to call this fella Jack. So Jack said he had spent a lot of his life tracking down stories of the paranormal, hunting evidence of strange creatures and supernatural beings. Personally, I'd always wondered why we didn't get more guys like that out here. Maybe the isolation keeps all the weirdness hemmed in, or maybe it's just that safe bubble that people in cities live in inside the action. They don't hear about the stuff that happens outside, and because, you know, to them, there's nothing outside of their bubble. So trust me, says this is no Skinwalker Ranch. It's just the outback, and it's just this way whenever you go if you look hard enough. Plenty of people never see what's right in front of them, though, mind you. Anyway, we figured Jack was here because someone had finally listened to the whispers to do, you know, to get out and about outside of what happens in their bubble. And some people have, you know, drive out to do these little things. And says, on one side, we were partly right. Now, a lot of the family have no time for people like Jack, but Dad certainly does. He says he appreciates people who are able to look beyond what they are told to be true and make some effort to find what is actually true. No more than a handful of people will ever believe anything Jack writes. Much like no more than a handful of people will believe anything I talk about in these stories, we welcome Jack in for a cup of tea and to have a quick chat. Well, it turned out he was looking for a dinosaur. No, I didn't write that down wrong. See, there have been stories for as long as I can remember of a monster that, at the very least, closely resembles a dinosaur. Now, I'm going to butcher this, guys, because I have no idea, but I do remember us talking about in the past a little bit of this, is the Beringer. You remember that?
I think so.
It says the Beringer has appeared in cave art, ancient cave art, and most people thought it was a spirit creature until there were some sightings of it back in the 70s. Even these days, the so-called Beringer tracks will show up every now and then. But it's not something I've ever really taken seriously. But not until I met Jack, anyway. Jack was enthusiastic and had a wealth of knowledge about cryptids of all kinds. He was actually a very interesting man who had seen and done a lot. And if his stories were all true, anyway. Well, Dad particularly was captivated. Although I did see a little eye roll when we finally got onto the subject of the Beringer, Jack wasn't perturbed at all. Yeah, I wish I could do a good Australian accent.
Go ahead.
No. It says, yes, that's about the reaction I normally get. And he laughed. But I genuinely think it's out there, Jack said. Now, he was an animated guy, passionate about what he believed in. Within minutes now, there was a map of the region spread out on the table, and Jack was pointing fervently at various areas. Over here, there was a sighting in 1976, and down by Dover Bridge in 1990. Now, there were a series of sightings reported in the area around Janet's Gap between 1978 and 1992. And in 2001, a hiker reported seeing tracks along the river in Blackwater Gorge. But the best sightings come from the hills north of here. And he jabbed a finger at the map, indicating the range of crags that just pushed onto our northern border. They were pretty unfriendly and riddled with deep ravines and steep gorges, but weren't really high enough to have any official name, as with most ranges in Australia. We'd name them the Carterfield Hills, after the property my great-grandfather grew up on. These hills are a hot spot for Beringer sightings and evidence. I found dozens of stories from way back in the 1800s up to about 2 years ago. Then, last year, a soldier was out there just keeping himself sharp and had an encounter with what he described as a large reptile that stalked him for several kilometers. This was about 150 kilometers away from your border, but the roughest country is where I think it must live, if it's out there, and that's the southern end of the range nearest your property. I came to ask permission to access the hills from your place and move further north from there. Otherwise, I've got to go about 100 kilometers further. Well, Dad had a look in his eye, his curiosity clearly aroused. Sure, Dad said, on one condition. So Jack smiled. It's your land, mate. What can I do for you? I want to come with you. He laughed at that, but not in a bad way or anything. So Jack said, you know what? That sounds like a great idea. I know nothing about the terrain out here, so a partner who does would make it a lot easier. So Jack turned and looked at me. Want to join the hunt? Truth be told, I didn't really. There were a lot of reasons, but mostly I just thought it was too weird even for out here. But I still said yes. Now, Dad's pushing 65, and a life of hard work has taken its toll, so I thought someone would probably need to look out for him and potentially bring him back down if and when he couldn't keep up with Jack. There was preparation and such, but ultimately, 3 days later, we were driving Jack's truck into the Carterfields. He was thorough and well-equipped, with a fully stocked state-of-the-art four-wheel drive that I seriously thought could probably climb Mount Everest. Now, of course, due to the terrain, we would have a lot of walking to get into the Carterfields. It's a seemingly endless series of sharp ravines, deep narrow gorges, and low steep hills, all clad with thick bush. We spent the afternoon setting up a base camp. Now, I'm not exaggerating when I say that this guy, Jack, had more gadgets than I ever even knew existed. He had thermal cameras and starlight cameras and trail cams and these big microphones that looked like satellite dishes and all sorts of other stuff. He must have been loaded. Anyway, that night, Jack wanted to have a preliminary, that's a stroke, folks, a preliminary look around just near where we were camped. It was warm summer evening, and we spent a few hours just walking around within about 2 kilometers of the campsite with the thermal camera. The amount of hidden life it revealed was actually pretty amazing. But predictably, there was no giant dinosaur. And so around 2 a.m., we tromped back into camp and collapsed into our swags. 4 more days were spent exploring the ranges, hiking in and out of thick pockets of bushland choke deep in the ravines. I'd never really spent any time in the Carter Fields, so it was actually pretty eye-opening for me. And I didn't believe in living dinosaurs, but the terrain out there made me wonder what actually could be hanging around. Some of those places we would easily have been the first humans ever to poke around, I'm sure. Almost anything could live out there. Now, Jack assured me that most of his expeditions went just like this. Rare and undiscovered creatures are rare and undiscovered for good reason. And this was the 3rd month of solid exploration for him. I didn't think we'd find anything anyway, but I definitely didn't think that we would when he told us that. I certainly wasn't prepared to find a 45-centimeter-long, 3-toed footprint in the sand along one of the river gorges. It's a sheltered, picturesque spot. High sandstone walls and shallow, cool green water with a coarse sand shore and bottom. Now, the trackway, it ran along the river for maybe 30 meters before veering into the water. Dad and Jack were ecstatic, and I have to admit, I was pretty shocked. They looked something like emu tracks. But no emu gets that big, even out here in the weird lands. This is the part of every other strange creature story I've ever read where the discovery can't be documented. People don't have cameras, or they mysteriously don't work, or some other fanciful thing steps in. Not here, though. Jack was unbelievably meticulous. Photographing and measuring every single track, not once or twice, but dozens of times, and from all angles and all perspectives, and casting those that he could in the soft sand with plaster. The man was obsessive in documenting this find. I have no idea where all that data went, but I presume that it must be out there somewhere for anyone who knows where to look. Now that done, we decided to stay out and explore the area more. We were all well used to roughing it, and from the enthusiasm that the other two were exhibiting, I gathered we probably wouldn't be getting a lot of rest anyway. A thermal and starlight camera were broken out of our heavy packs, and we ate a hasty meal before sloshing through the shallow river in the direction the tracks were headed. Now, unfortunately, the shore on that side was rock rather than sand, and there was no sign of any tracks anywhere on the other side. Now, we guessed that the animal would continue heading in the same direction it had been, of course on the other side of the water, and then set off as the sun began to sink. Now, we walked along a rock shelf that protruded out into the river. Now look, I have to admit it, it was a bit surreal and ridiculous. We were, as far as I could tell, tracking a damned dinosaur. We were tracking something anyway, and it was big, judging by the damage it did to the shrubs as the walls of the gorge dropped away and pulled itself up to the riverbank. Now, Jack reckoned that the animal that left the prints that size would have been just under 2 meters tall at the hip. I still couldn't believe that such an animal existed out here. Now, the path we were following made me pretty uneasy, though. Whatever made it was chugging through thick brush like it was nothing. Now, the first brief encounter we had was just after midnight. By this stage, we must have walked 5 or 6 kilometers through the rugged hills. We were on top of a bald hill, checking the hard-packed dirt for any sign of the direction the creature had taken, when a flock of birds burst out of the pocket of bush right below us in a fury. The trees themselves were shaking, as though something massive was moving through it with no regard for the thick forest. From somewhere down in that shaking mass came an unearthly cry, a kind of weird keying squawk that sounded off five times before the trees settled at silence and fell all over it again. It reminded me of a bird, but the loudest bird you ever heard, and it threw me off because I kind of expected the Beringer, if it was real, to roar. Maybe I just got the idea from Jurassic Park. I don't really know. Along with the calls, which Jack no doubt recorded, so thorough was the man, we got the barest flash of something hot on the thermal imager, the outline scattered by the foliage. I can't say I really wanted to dive down into that bush after it, but I didn't really have a choice because that's exactly what Dad and Jack did. And I wasn't going to be hanging around on that hill all by myself. Now, this thing was moving fast. We were moving at a good clip, but at the time we were going down in the thicket, it was well and truly gone. Now, the ground was all tore up, but Jack wanted to push on and try to get the shots of this animal rather than the damage it had done to the scenery. So we tracked it for a couple of hours, despite having been only a few hundred meters behind it at the first thicket. Ever so often, we heard it calling somewhere ahead of us, that same bird-like cry as before. Now, once, we even heard a response, much more distant and somewhere off to our right, and Jack absolutely lit up at the idea that there might be a population of these things out here. Must have been near 5 a.m., though, when it all happened. Hunting anything is about sharp flurries of activity amongst long periods of nothing. And it turns out, the Beringer is no different. The sky was just starting to brighten again. Not dawn, just the first hint of light. Now, we've been chasing this thing for hours, and we were spent and sore. The adrenaline from our earlier close encounter was totally gone by now. We had just pushed into a little bit of a clearing in a small valley when it stepped out in front of us. Even in the shadows under the trees, it was clearly bigger than I thought it could be and still go unfound for so long. Now, I said before, 2 meters or so at the hip and easily 8 meters from the nose to tail. I suddenly felt very small. We all froze completely. Jack with his camera fixed on that beast that stood no more than 20 meters away. I felt like it could cross that distance before I blink, if it wanted to. Now, I'm not ashamed to admit that I was pretty terrified at this point. The Beringer was nothing like I expected. Apart from being the same shape as a lot of dinosaurs I knew, and the teeth were pretty much what I expected. The surprise, though, were the feathers. Rust-colored and sprouting from the clawed arms, as well as running all the way down the ridge of the spine from the crown of the head. An arrow straight tail balanced the creature in a surprisingly low posture. It was very agile looking and very graceful. It was holding itself like a coiled spring. Large eyes glinted with a certain intelligence as it studied us. And I was somehow aware that it knew what we were. It lowered its head and hissed. It says they're scaled up hundreds of times of this hissing sound like you would hear from a lizard, but opening the savage mouth to show off every single one of its thumb-sized teeth. Then it simply turned and walked away, completely unflustered by the act of turning its back on us. I know that's probably anticlimactic after the Bunyip deaths and the McCoy, but to me, that's one of the most disconcerting things I've ever experienced. The Bunyip is said to be a territorial predator, and it was just doing what territorial predators do. The McCoy are terrifying, but they need us to have any effect or influence on our world. But that Beringer, I guess it reminds me how insignificant we are out here. It sized us up and found us to be completely worthless. The land doesn't care about our existence at all, much like the Beringer didn't give us a second thought. It's not our world. We have no power out here, no real control. I think it's so much scarier knowing that in the grand scheme of things, you're nothing. And that's what we all are out here. We're just another weird animal competing with all the others for survival. The land doesn't give a damn what happens to us either way. That's a harsh reality for those of us who depend on it for a living. So that's that fella's encounter with Jack and his dad and him tracking this thing, and they spotted it at 20 meters.
Man, that is
a dinosaur.
Well, you know, I will say this.
Doesn't it seem more believable in Australia, though?
Yeah, it does. And I would say that maybe this is a case of misidentification, possibly, because you know that those giant birds, those cassowaries.
Yes.
Those things get pretty tall, right? They're giant. They're like size of an ostrich.
Yes.
6 feet tall, 4 foot tall, weigh 150 pounds, something like that. They've killed people. They're very dangerous birds because they're large talons. But they look something prehistoric. Mm-hmm. And now scientists are coming forward and saying that many dinosaurs that we once thought were smooth skinned did in fact have feathers. Could this have been a cassowary or something like that, that something happened to it? It had the bird version of mange or whatever. And so it was missing a lot of its feathers, so it looked like it had leathery skin. If you took the feathers off of that, it would look like a dinosaur.
Like a featherless chicken looks scary.
Right? So yeah. Maybe it was something like that. And because of how they saw it, how they viewed it, it appeared much larger than it was. So, mm-hmm. Oh my God, that looks like a giant dinosaur, when in reality it was just like much closer. I don't know. Or perhaps there's dinosaurs roaming.
And he does point out, though, that it had scaly hands, claws, and arms.
Yeah, right.
And then he's talking about it being 8 meters from nose to tail.
Yeah.
That's a long critter right there.
I agree.
But I don't, like, what kind of tail would a bird have? Like, what could you misidentify?
Well, maybe you didn't see the whole thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know what you, I don't know what you could misidentify to give you the idea of what he saw.
But then there's legends of this thing being in that area. So mm-hmm. It wasn't like he's the first person. There's cave paintings of that. What do they call it? The Barongo in that area.
Well, and he talked about finding the tracks.
Yeah. So now the tracks wouldn't change your size of it. Like, you saw a large track.
You know, it'd have to be big.
It would have to be big.
Yeah.
But then again, how good of a track are we talking?
Yeah. Well, and that's another thing is, like, I don't know, like you're talking about, how close is this thing's track to a bird track?
Right.
Like, does it look like an emu track?
I mean, I've had guys tell me that they saw mountain lion tracks. And I was like, well, can you show me? And then they showed me, and I'm like, that's not a mountain lion's track. That's a dog.
Yeah.
They're like, well, I don't think so. I'm like, no, I know. And I showed them why.
Yeah.
So, look, I'm not trying to knock the guy's story. I love the story. I'm just trying to sit back.
You're trying to rationalize. As you're telling the story, in between, like, what could it be?
Right. I'm trying to think of, like, what in the hell are they seeing, or did they see?
I've got you another one.
Okay.
This was a person named Angel submitted this. It says, I've had many paranormal experiences, rather, and this is one of them. Now, I don't tell many people this, as they don't believe me, and why would they? I barely even believe it's true myself, but it is in every detail. I live in Australia, and it says, I and my ex-husband and his friend were driving home from an event. And we lived in the deep bush and were about 5 minutes from home, chatting, of course, and laughing all the way. And all of a sudden, something massive ran out in front of the car from left to right. And it was as follows. Huge and terrifying as the lights were on this being. It stood much higher than the car itself. It towered over it, actually. The thing was running pretty fast, but easily seen by all of us. Now, we saw it clearly, and it was about 2 times bigger than a massive bull cow. I don't really know what the bull cow riding is. You're either bull or a cow.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. What? I'm
like, massive bull cow, but so we'll say a massive bull. Probably like a bush bull is what we're talking, like scrub bulls out in Australia.
Yeah, I've seen lots of guys.
Yeah, like a big water buffalo.
Yeah, those things are massive.
Yeah. says 2 times bigger than that, and it had leathery skin with bits of black brown hair on it. And now, you ready for this?
No, I'm ready.
Looked like a prehistoric rhinoceros, and it was huge. No fur and small little short skinny tail with a hairy bit on the end. It had a massively large chest cavity, huge chest cavity, much bigger than the rest of the body. No neck, practically, and the biggest teeth, having a large front tooth protruding out far, like 3 inches from the mouth. The jawbone was large and stood out. It had small, round, piercing, terrifying eyes and straight legs, thin looking like a gigantic wild hog. I started crying, jumping in the back seat terrified and screaming loudly, and my ex-husband was saying, "What in the hell is that thing?" And so was his friend. We were hysterical, and it ran into the darkness as if running for something from something else. It really was unreal, but true and strange, and I now realize that there are weird creatures in our bush. I have seen other weird things as well. Now, later on, a local said that he'd also seen this thing. It's weird, and I was terrified to go near that part of our drive again. Now, these things are real, and I don't care if no one believes me. We weren't drinking. We weren't taking drugs. And we still don't. And we're still all in shock. This was really a wake-up call. And he goes on to say, Australia has weird stuff. Yeah, no joke.
Yeah.
Come to think about it, back after all the research now I've done, I felt like we went into another time or dimension, and it just felt weird as if it wasn't a normal animal. And so this goes on and says, looking up what about this thing, it said it looked like prehistoric Australia. Now, this happened back in 1990, it says in the tea gardens of, I guess it'd be New South Wales, Australia.
So these people were cruising down the road, you know, probably listening to Men at Work, eating a Vegemite sandwich.
Here and we go, drinking Foster's.
No, they said they weren't drinking, sir.
That's right.
They said they weren't drinking. They didn't mention.
They're going to kill you for saying stuff like that.
What did I say? They're driving down the road listening to
Man at Work.
Okay. NXS. They're listening to NXS.
How come they couldn't be listening to AC/DC?
I don't know. I think this happened in the 90s. AC/DC wasn't as popular then.
They're always good. How dare you say it? But go on with your theory. All right. Go on.
The Bee Gees. They're listening to the Bee Gees.
All right.
Eating a Vegemite sandwich, and they see this giant rhinoceros-looking thing run out in the bush. Now, I mean, couldn't it have been like a deformed water buffalo? Because those things are massive, like 1,500 pounds. We know they live there.
But I like what she says is it felt like she was in a time slip.
Well, yeah.
And I'm just saying, you like time slips.
A rhino? Could it have been like I've brought up so many times before, like some baller out of control drug dealer, like Pablo Escobar's got, he had hippos.
Baller. So
maybe there's a guy that has a private ranch and he has rhinos on there and the thing escaped.
Prehistoric rhinos on his private Australian ranch.
Just regular rhinos. They already look prehistoric.
That is true.
Maybe. This story doesn't seem as amazing as a dinosaur.
Well, I got you one that I think is going to.
Okay, go ahead.
This is from our buddy Lon. Lon actually got this. He got a guy named BD to send this to him back in 2013.
Okay.
It says, hey, Lon, this took place in Perth, Western Australia. So this is about 12 months ago. So if he received it in November of 2013, it would be back in 2012. Okay.
Is it Mark Hunt from Perth?
Yeah. Oh, I think he is.
I think so.
I think so.
Yeah.
Says, I'm only just reporting it after seeing similar reports coming in. One night, I was outside having a cigarette. There we go again, y'all. And looking up at the sky, when something caught my eyes, it flew over the stars and disrupted the light pattern slightly. It was completely silent, and it was just a coincidence that I was there at the time to see this. At first, I thought it might be some sort of plane, as it was still roughly a few miles away at least. But as it got closer, the way it moved resembled the way a jellyfish would swim if it was horizontal. It's hard to describe, but it looked to be expanding at the front like a balloon, then using that air to propel itself along. It was roughly 100 meters above me, and I watched it for 10 minutes. After that, it was out of sight. This was during a clear night sky in Australia. Now, I'm very familiar with the aircraft, as I live relatively close to the Jandok Airport.
Yeah, go ahead. That sounds right. Sounds about right.
Jandakot Airport.
Yeah, we'll believe that.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, we're going to go with that. And we see and hear these things all the time. It was certainly not a machine of any kind. I yelled out to my mother-in-law, who was staying with us at the time, to come out and look. She also saw it. I filmed it on my smartphone, but being 8 p.m. at night, it was pitch black and you couldn't see anything. Caveat, also being in 2012, good luck. If I had to guess, I would say the feeling I was left with is that it was some sort of creature. It moved gracefully and gradually in large, deliberate movement. Like a large bird would do if it had big wings to flap, then gliding for a bit. Although this was unlike anything I could describe, it appeared to be translucent in certain parts, and then it remained at the same altitude and speed, but it was completely silent. So, BD saw something that looked like a jellyfish, but that's not where this ends, folks. A little while after that, Lon received this. I would like to confirm the story of the flying jellyfish-like creature as described by BD. There were two of us, actually, not just myself. We were in Perth. Now, what does CBD, what do you think that stands for?
Like CBD oil.
No. This is talking about a place, Perth, CBD.
Oh, I have no idea.
I don't know. But it says actually having a glass of wine on a quite loud jazz music playing on a balcony about 10 meters from the ground. I'm so thrilled to find out there's another person who saw this. Now it says the creature was behaving exactly as described by BD. So basically like a jellyfish, but without the long tentacles and about the size of a balloon. It was kind of changing according to the different colored lighting attached to the balcony as it was flying upwards so effortlessly. It's really precious that I have finally found this. I've been searching for so long.
CBD is the Central Business District.
Oh, okay. Of Perth.
Good Correct. Call.
We'd have never guessed that.
No.
And it says, I have to be honest. I don't recall the exact day, but it must have been the same night as BD mentioned. We had seen it around 9 or 10, either Friday or Saturday. The creature wasn't too shy either, meaning it didn't fly in a hurry. And I like this, I would gladly put my hand on my heart on this one and now may actually try to find it again. But who knows how often they appear. Now, this is from a person going by the name MP. So MP had that exact same thing happen.
Really?
So three people saw it. The person with them, you know, BD saw it and tried to get his mother-in-law. Mother-in-law saw it. And then this person, MP, saw it and had a friend with them, too. So there was multiple people right, seeing this
hanging
thing.
Out, listening to Rick Springfield.
Or here we go.
Silver Chair.
Okay. I forgot about Silver Chair. Perhaps,
okay, they're listening you're to the Veronicas.
Going away too, fat boy. That's who they're listening to is the Veronicas.
That's what I'm saying. Or Air Supply. Air Supply is pretty good.
Air Supply is pretty good, but they're not near. They're not near as pretty as Lisa.
That's true. That's true.
Lisa and Jessica are a lot prettier than Air Supply.
And I saw the same thing. When you're describing the look of this thing, I'm thinking of like the swimming looking things from the Matrix. I mean, how they're mechanical and they have
a tail. That's
what
I was thinking. Yeah,
and the way it's moving, it's yeah. like it but looks. It, biological, but yet mechanical.
Yeah. yeah. They even said, man, it just looks all biologic. Okay, first of all, what the hell is that?
I don't know, but have you ever seen the satellite footage up in space and you can see those things flying
around? You believe
around?
In space?
Yeah.
Oh.
The things flying around in camera and they almost look like they're biological.
Yeah.
Giant. And some of the people have talked about them being giant biological beings living up in the stratosphere. You've heard these stories. Tell yeah. me you've heard about yeah. it. People have been trying to figure out ways to catch them. And they're like, well, just because things live down here at sea level, why couldn't things live way up there? And they're talking about like a huge organism that's like 2 miles long, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds
like
crazy
to me. Like a
giant
tapeworm swimming around.
But and that's what they claim is when these people see these UFOs, that it's actually one of those that's actually descended lower.
Yeah.
There are people that have found like looks like jelly substance in their yard that has
yes.
been claimed that it was some yep. kind of biological yep. thing that fell to earth somehow. We should probably do an episode on that stuff because that stuff's pretty interesting.
The jelly substance in if your yard?
Yeah. You know, the things that are these strange cryptid creatures that are living in the high uppermost parts of our atmosphere.
Well, I'm going to leave you with one more.
Okay.
And it says in 1982. A 67-year-old woman saw a picture of E.T., Steven Spielberg's cute little alien creation. And it made her think of an experience that she had as a 15-year-old girl near the estuary at Mandurah, Western Australia. And she supplied a report to the Perth UFO Research Group that stated this. In 1930, I was sitting, reading with my parents in a humpy on a block in Mandurah in Geary Road by the light of a hurricane lamp with the door partly open. Now, I'm going to stop right there and tell you there is no part of that sentence I just read that I understand other than I was sitting reading and I understand parents and I understand lamp and door. And other than that, it's all on you Australians to know what that means. But
you never read with your parents in a humpy?
In a humpy with a hurricane lamp and the door partly open?
I think she means hoopty.
No, or, I don't you know, think
like
so.
A car, like a cool 6.4 Impala.
I don't think so. No, so here we go. Here we go. So it says the time was about 8 p.m. and we'd went to bed early and a little pink creature walked in. It was about 24 inches in height with large ears, big bulbous eyes covered with a film, small hands, large feet, a slit of a mouth, no hair, and shiny as if it was wet or oily. Goes on to say that we, so it's not just her, listen, we were terrified. And my father went white, and being a religious man, said it was the work of the devil. Picking up a prawning net, he picked it up, and he made it. It made a noise like so. He netted this thing, and it started going ee ee. And my father put it outside. We never saw it again, and went to bed feeling very scared.
Yeah.
This was in 1930, and I never thought any more about it. Until I saw a picture of E.T., although only its eyes were the same. It did not have a round body, more straight down like a child's body, and I cannot remember seeing any sex organs. Its shape was like that of an elf.
A baby elf.
So it carries over into this. This is possibly from the 80s, it says here, that they're talking about that there was a person named, okay, a construction project manager who had been working on Groot Island at the time of his experience. And Groot Island is the largest island in the Gulf of Carpentara in northeastern Australia. The land is owned by the indigenous native Aboriginal people.
Okay.
It says on one occasion, the project manager decided to go fishing and approached the Aboriginal elders to get permission to travel through their lands to get to the proposed fishing spot. The elders gave their permission for the guy to travel through their lands, but with strict conditions. Now get ready for this. The elders explained this. Two young children had passed away and that the funeral ceremony was to be held on the day the project manager wanted to go fishing. The project manager was told to drive well clear of the site of the upcoming funeral ceremony. The elders wanted the souls of the departed children to have free and uninterrupted passage to travel from the deceased children across to the land to their destination beyond. These souls of the departed had been seen on their occasion and were small beings. On his trip to the fishing spot, the project manager drove clear of the funeral site, but in passing, he noticed a red glow in the bushes to his right. Then, without warning, two pink creatures walked out into the middle of the road in front of him. They turned and looked at him and then continued on their way. And he describes these things like this. Two pink humanoid beings that were about 3 feet tall and emitted a clearly visible red glow. As well as the red glowing, they were also shiny as if coated in oil of some sort. They were totally naked and hairless with large eyes. Now, apart from the large eyes, the project manager didn't mention any other features or appendages.
But the oily part.
Yes.
Right? That's similar to the previous sighting.
Yes. So, again, there's a lot of things the way it's coming on is, was this thing that were these the souls of the native children passing over? Were these aliens coming to, have the native aborigines of Australia been interacting with these native creatures for, are these alien creatures for this whole time? Is that where they're from? And when they go back, the native aborigines only take this form or whatever. And then, you know what I mean? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, I clearly have no
answer. And he told him, like, stay away, you know, and maybe it's just a wild coincidence. Maybe he said stay away and these things just happen to show up. Maybe there's no link whatsoever. But that is some more of the real wild stuff going on in weird Australia. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll wrap this puppy up. Hope you enjoyed it. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Crazy stories, man. Australia, you know, that part of the world.
We have to go.
It still seems that it's really wild, untamed, and with Indonesia just being northeast of that, you know, it makes me think that that part of the world, for whatever reason, still has these mythical monsters roaming around where, you know, you come to the States, not so much. I mean, the population of Australia is really low compared to here.
I have to go, but I'm afraid I'd want to end up staying for a long period of time.
I want to go. Our friend over there, they like to tease me about giant spiders. And so I know that there's deadly creatures over here in America. I've heard lots of hunters and stuff before talk about, you guys always think Australia is so dangerous, but you guys got way more dangerous animals here in the States where we live.
Yeah, but I can see those.
I don't know. I think it's because we're accustomed to them. That maybe, you know what I mean? Like, since it's so foreign to us, like a giant bird-eating spider that it seems really scary.
Yeah.
Or to them where they're used to it. They're like, but you guys have grizzly bears and bears.
Isn't that where the crate's from also?
The crate?
Like the most poisonous snake.
Yeah. I don't know, but the box jellyfish is for sure.
That's for sure from over there.
The fear snake, which is like the inland Taipan.
And there's also a whole lot of great white sharks in their water around that thing.
Oh, I definitely wouldn't go in the ocean. No.
Shocker. Neither would I.
No, there's no reason to be in there. Stop messing. Stop fooling around in that environment, right?
Yeah.
But a lot of the interior of the country, I think, is pretty hostile. You know, it's pretty hostile. It's a tough place to make a living.
I just want to go see it.
Oh, yeah. I definitely want to go.
It's big and vast. And I don't know, there's just something about it. I don't know if I've told the story of this whole thing, but I was, one of my grandfathers, of course, like we've talked about, was like with Kyle's grandfather, but we're on Normandy. And then my father's father was in the South Pacific. And he actually got stationed in for a while in Australia for like several months. And if it hadn't have been for my grandmother refusing to go, I would have probably been born in Australia, because that's where my grandfather wanted to go. Right after the war, he was ready to move down there. Well, then when I was a very young boy, 5 or 6, my father got a job offer to run a ranch in Australia and was ready to go. And this was right before my mother and father split up. So that was a big deal, as my father wanted to go and we were going to move to Australia when I was kindergarten age. So, and I don't remember what stopped the whole thing, but I mean, like, it's been one of those deals. It's been on the radar of my family for years and years and wanting to go down there.
Yeah, and oddly enough, a lot of Australians make their way and live here in Parker County because of all the cutting horses and things like that. So ranching is a big part of their lifestyle, you know?
Well, that's what we always laughed about. Yeah, is there's so many Australians in this county. Tons.
Yeah.
And like I always laugh about, what do they say, that Australians are just Texans with British accents? Yeah. And that what they said? That was one of the memes going around here in the States.
Yeah, they probably don't like that.
But you know what it is? It does remind me of Texas. Australia, that's why I think it would be, like, it would feel more at home than any place else.
Have you ever eaten kangaroo? And oddly, before I get to my question, the high school mascot here in our town is the Weatherford Kangaroos.
That's true, yeah.
So, I mean, that's an odd thing, too, to have that as our mascot. Have you ever eaten kangaroo meat?
Yes.
I have not.
Yes, we had it at, I'm trying to think what it was. One of those big ranch. Remember where we did all that, the work at that cutting horse place?
Yeah.
It was out there one time. Now, I know that you and koala bears share something in common. You both had chlamydia. No?
I thought you were going to be both like eucalyptus.
Oh, no.
Like eucalyptus drops and stuff. Yeah, you get a cough, you know, you get some like eucalyptus those drops. You don't like
it's
that.
A joke, folks. He's never had chlamydia.
Yeah, it's jokes, folks. Yeah, I've never had that. I remember
And you love eating it out back steakhouse. I know you like that.
I like blooming onions. Yeah. No, I remember we were in a restaurant in Canada somewhere, and we had a bunch of exotic foods. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think kangaroo was one of them, but I had a lot of strange things on there for the first time.
Was it as good as that eland we ate last year?
Yeah, that was really good.
That was really good.
First time I've ever eaten eland.
And it was really good.
You know, for those that don't know, that's like a deer, a plains deer from Africa.
Yeah, eland's the largest antelope in Africa.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. I know I have a kangaroo skin baseball glove.
Yeah, that's true.
And I've got one of those.
I used to have kangaroos, the shoes. They were just called Ruse. Remember, Walter Payton was sponsored by Ruse. Yep. Remember that?
Maybe.
Are they still a company?
There's no way.
I don't know. Some of those companies, they never die. They just become, you know, it's a fad. They become really popular. Like
bigger company buys
Zeke Cavaricci or Jerbo and stuff. But like, they're still around. They're just not popular now.
We got to go to Australia,
man. I wonder if kangaroos are still a thing. I bet you they are.
And see, I want to go fish. And then, of course, we have to go to New Zealand. If we're down that far, we got to go to New Zealand.
Yeah, it's pretty far away, though. I mean, unlike when you look at a globe, to keep things in perspective, they look like they're pretty close.
They look
close,
like they're
real
close.
They're not really that close. It's like saying, well, you know, Columbia's not that far from Texas. You're like, it kind of is.
But if I'm going that long, I need to wait till I retire because I plan on being gone. Like, I need to go spend at least a month or two in Australia.
Yeah, that's the problem. If you go travel that far, you're going to want to spend a lot of time. Speaking of time,
we're out of it.
We're just about out of it. Are you looking forward to anything coming up in the next few weeks in the movie theater?
Well, I've got something big this weekend. We're going down because, like I said, one of my wife's cousins is the right tackle for the Oklahoma State Cowboys. I thought he was starting, but he's not. I forgot the starter's name ahead of him, but he does get to play. They alternate him in some. I'm trying to think his number. Number 52, folks. Number 52, his name's Jacob Farrell. If you look him up, anybody can go check him out. But he is actually my cousin. And I remember when that boy was born. And so he's playing for them. And they're playing in Austin against the Longhorns there. And we have been invited. So we're going down to set with the fam and go watch him play this weekend. So we're going to run down there Saturday and watch the OSU-UT game.
That's awesome. This is going to be your first time watching a Longhorns game in Austin.
Yep.
You're going to love it.
Yep.
I'm sorry. I mean, I'm glad that he's your cousin, but I can't root against my Longhorns.
That's what I told his dad when we were talking is I'm like, you know how hard this is going to be? I'm like, look, I'll go and I'll enjoy myself, but I'm like, it's going to be like, I'll root for them any other time.
Yeah.
But this is going to be one of those times, man, that I'm like, I just don't know.
Yeah, I like Oklahoma State. I mean, I think they're a great team. They have a fantastic wrestling program. Like I'm a big OSU fan. I like OSU way more than I like OU.
Well,
I despise OU.
I got into them because of their wrestling.
Yeah.
That's the reason that I became a huge Cowboys fan was because of the wrestling program.
I got into the following because one of my previous bosses, Keith Schrick,
mm-hmm.
he was an OSU graduate. So I always remember him telling me stories.
And then I just went blank on the billionaire that just passed away.
I'm not sure of this.
T Boone Pickens, the man that always paid off. He'd passed away just like, a few weeks ago.
And so did the lead singer of the Cars.
But T Boone was the one that always dropped all that money for OSU.
Gotcha.
He was one of their big, big sponsors.
Yeah. Okay. Sick. He just died, man. I love the Cars.
Yeah. That was, a rough thing. Yeah.
You know, I just, something about that music. I'll never
Eddie forget. Money passed away.
Yeah. I saw that too.
It's a bummer too.
Man, shaking.
The problem is we got to get used to this. As we get older, we're like, man, it's a surprise.
No,
like,
this isn't really.
It's not a surprise, dude. We're nearing up. I mean, like, we're getting close to halfway to 50.
I'm like 98 years old. I mean, yeah, so this, you're right. There's no mystery here.
No.
This seems totally normal.
Yeah,
never mind.
Yeah, right. Never mind. That's no big shocker. What's more shocking is if, like, old rockers didn't die. Keith Richards.
Yeah, how are they going?
Whatever. Look, if you're an old rocker or you're not feeling too well, go get an injection of Keith Richards' blood.
Right?
No whatever kidding. He's doing is working.
Yeah, he's doing something.
Yeah,
drinking vampire tears. Something just,
yeah,
is
whatever
going
he's doing,
on.
Find out.
But speaking of musicians and stuff, you know, there's always been like East Coast, West Coast beef,
mm-hmm.
you know, like Biggie and Tupac and all that. Well, there's the same kind of rivalry going on in the world of hamburgers. Now, I'm out, and this has been an ongoing rivalry. I was not made aware of this till recently.
Lay it on
but,
me.
On the West Coast, everybody's favorite chain is In-N-Out Burgers, right?
Yeah.
And on the East Coast, apparently everybody's is Shake Shack. Here in Texas, we have Whataburger.
I like In-N-Out, though.
Right. So if you are in the West Coast, you can't have Shake Shack. They don't have them there, only In-N-Out. And if you go on the East Coast, where my family's from, they have Shake Shack, no In-N-Out. For whatever reason, us lucky Texans, we got all of them. We have In-N-Out, Shake Shack, and Whataburger. But I've never had a Shake Shack till the other day.
Okay. Lay it on me.
So I've been hearing about this rivalry for a long time. Mm-hmm. And it's just, there's not that many of them in the DFW area. There's only like six, where if you go to In-N-Out, there's probably 40 of those.
Yeah.
So I've had those over the years quite often, and I like them. Everybody's going to want me to vote on, like, give me the top three between In-N-Out, Shake Shack, and Whataburger. I can't do it because I like all of them for different reasons. So sometimes I'm in the mood for a Whataburger. That's what I want. I don't care if there's another burger at some restaurant that's better. Mm-hmm. That's what I want. Anyway, so I recently had a Shake Shack. I have to tell you, it's really good. So
I need to go find one of these.
You need to try one. Okay. If your listeners are out there and you have had any of these, if you're lucky enough to have the all three, then maybe you could give me your ranking. You could email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can contact us on social media. Which do you think is the best, In-N-Out, Shake Shack, or Whataburger? In my humble opinion, they're different in other ways. They're very I will say this, In-N-Out and Shake Shack, the vegetables are very, very fresh. Shake Shack doesn't come with onions. Of course, I mean, you can get it added, but their normal burger does not come with onions, which I'm fine with because mm-hmm. I like onions, but I have to have my onions cooked. I don't like raw onions.
Yeah.
Because it's overpowering, and to me it takes the flavor, and that's like the only thing I taste, right? When it comes to In-N-Out Burger, I like to get the double, and I like to get it animal style. And one of the key things, if you've never had it, is when they're frying the patty on the griddle, they put yellow mustard on the top, and then they flip it, and they actually grill the mustard. And that actually changes the way it's like, yeah, man, it's pretty good.
So anyways, I get my burgers neat, I get no vegetables.
You're like Caleb. Caleb likes it plain and dry. Give me meat, cheese, two circle breads.
Because to me, if you're going to put vegetables on it, then why don't you microwave your salad?
But I like veggies on my burgers.
Yeah, you would.
I like tomatoes. I like the lettuce.
I'm not saying you don't pickles. Have to. I'm just saying I don't see the sense in it, but go ahead.
I love it. I love the bacon. Anyway, so I've heard about this rivalry for years. I was actually able to try all of them. The trifecta has been
completed. I'm going to have to try it. The Holy Trinity of Burgers
I've tasted. And now these are fast food, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing.
We're not talking Five Guys Burgers or Shep's. The burger joint we have here is good.
Oh, yeah. You can go lots of places and get fantastic gourmet burgers, yeah. But they're not. I wouldn't consider them fast food. So, and Shake Shack's way more expensive. So, like, just the burger was like $9. Whoa. Where if you go to In-N-Out, it's like $4.
I really, really, like, I had never eaten In-N-Out until you had started telling me, I need to try it. So one day I tried it. And then I didn't know you could get it in a box. So I didn't know I was going to be driving around eating out of a trough.
Oh, they ask if you want to eat it in your car. Yeah.
And I said, yeah. And then, but you know what? I'm a fan. I like their fries.
Yeah, I do too. Cause they're freshly cut. Like, yeah. I'm saying, like, each restaurant has different things. Like the Shake Shack fries, I'm not a big fan of. They're crinkle fries. I just didn't like them. They taste frozen because they are. They're frozen. They're delivered frozen, then fried. I'm fine with that. I don't prefer that. The reason I was into the In-N-Out is because when I used to play hockey, I used to always hear these West Coast guys talking about In-N-Out and how Whataburger was crap because In-N-Out was so good. So I was like, when the chain finally came to Texas, I was like, let me try this out. I tried it. It's good. Is it way better than Whataburger? I say no. And maybe that's just because
it's not way better.
I've been raised here my whole life. So, like, even though.
Is In-N-Out open 24/7?
I'm sure they are. I don't know. I'm sure some locations are.
Because if
you go down on 7th Street, they're probably open.
Because Whataburger's open 24/7, like 364. I think they're closed on Christmas Day is like it.
Dude, another thing I like about Whataburger is like.
You can eat in there smashed.
You can order breakfast like anytime you want to. There's not like 10 o'clock. We don't sell that no more.
Whataburger does. Like Whataburger cuts you off at 11.
Oh, they did? They did? No, used to?
Yeah, it's always been 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. But anything after 11 p.m., you can order breakfast.
Maybe it's 11 p.m.
Yeah, anything after 11 p.m., you can order breakfast.
It's like, man, I'd show up there after the bar and I can get breakfast. No, oh, God. It's not on the menu. I will say.
I spend $30 on taquitos.
One thing I will say about In-N-Out is the simplicity of the menu. Mm-hmm. I enjoy that. They don't have a whole bunch of bells and, you know, like you go to McDonald's, it's confusing. Like they literally have 300 items.
Who goes there?
I don't. But the kids, but Luke likes it because you get the toy.
Yeah.
Kids love McDonald's. They have cornered that market with children.
When they quit making them in the animal fat in the French fries and stuff, I'm past.
I don't know how
now.
We got on the fast food corner. I don't know. Here. Have you tried the new veggie burger from Burger King, the Impossible Whopper?
What's the point?
I don't know. I don't
like
it.
That'll give you like instant belly cancer. I'm not doing it.
Have you tried the Popeye's chicken sandwich that everybody's been going crazy over?
I do like Popeye's chicken, but just putting it between two pieces of bread is not going to impress me.
But have you seen this? People have been going crazy. I think.
What about the one KFC's making? You going to try it?
No.
It's chicken strips between two donuts.
No, that sounds terrible.
Yeah. I'm like, look, I don't understand the chicken sandwich. All it is fried chicken with two pieces of bread on it. That's it. Now Popeye's doing bring your own bun.
I think that they created the craziness, which has ultimately helped them sell more.
It's helped everybody.
You know what I'm saying?
Because Cane's makes a chicken sandwich. Like, everybody's got their own
sandwich. I just saw another veggie burger. Because Burger King was the first to market, but I saw somebody else.
Here's what's funny. It's still garbage fast food. A veggie burger that's still garbage fast food. It's not like you're eating healthy, dude. You're eating some kind of crazy crap made in a test tube that they're going to make this burger out of. Like, if you went to a real vegan restaurant and got like a veggie burger there, yeah, it would probably be amazing.
I'll say one more thing before we move on. I have to close this show. I will say that like Chick-fil-A, In-N-Out, and Shake Shack, most of the time Whataburger, they look like they take their time and their employees. They actually look like clean, respectable, responsible people. Where if you go to some of these other chains, you got crackheads waiting on you.
I mean, we're not going to name names, but you all know which one we're talking about.
We got Sleepy Legs working at one. We got, I mean, you know what I'm talking about, folks.
You're lucky. Sure.
You know when you place in your order that it's going to be messed up. You get the feeling.
And like they ask you, like, you want any condiments? You want some ketchup? Yeah, yeah. And you know you're not going to get it.
I like when
no
you
matter
order,
what.
Like me and my family go through there, to say one of these restaurants, nameless, we'll get like six orders of French fries. And then they go, do you want ketchup? They give you like three packets. I'm like, what am I supposed to do with that?
I like when they give me my bag of food and it looks like that it was done by like a bunch of dudes on a trapeze. Like one guy was holding the sack and the others were just lobbing the food across the lobby, trying to catch it.
That's like six people just crossed the desert. They're like, you want any water? And they give you like a shot glass for 60. You're like, well, why don't just give me nothing?
I would rather have none than three packages of ketchup.
But don't you get the feeling when you go to like Chick-fil-A or In-N-Out, like the people actually waiting on you actually care?
If I go to Chick-fil-A, I actually feel like they do give a damn about how good my day is going.
Or the other places.
I feel like if you walked in there that they would give you a hug if you were having a bad day. Like, come on over. I'll give you a hug.
Yeah. I mean, we went to a McDonald's in Waco. And I mean, like literally all the employees, there was a line. There was all kinds of people. You could tell when you walked in, the mood felt wrong. All the customers were complaining. I mean, all the employees, they looked like they could care less.
They're just
about everybody there. They were just like, not whatever. I am the manager.
Come back here and make it yourself.
I mean, so if you've had some of those, the trilogy, like I talked about, and you can rank them if you want, send them to me and Cam. If you have any cool stories you'd like to share with me and Cam, always email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can follow us on all forms of social media. Until next time, folks, be careful out there. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.